ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Well, the latest inductee into the Australian Cricket Hall of Fame is Brett Lee, and I'm very pleased to say he joins us here on Grandstand. Brett, welcome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Good morning. It's it wasn't expected, but it's a very humbling experience to get this award.
How did you find out? Who told you?
A couple of weeks ago. It's been sort of secrecy for the last, probably about the last month, but had something come through an email, we jumped on a call, and then to have this announcement on day three here of the test match is very, very special. But I rang my parents first and foremost, and then thanked them and told them the good news, and they were very, very appreciative of my kind words to them. But I was never one to play cricket to get these awards. That wasn't the reason why I played. But that said, I'm so overwhelmed, and I feel very honoured to be picked.
Yeah, what does it mean to you to explore that point?
Well, I think it's an appreciation of all the sacrifices that you make as a young kid. I think back to the age of 9 when I wanted to bowl 160 k's and to wear the baggy green cap. I think about the age of 17, 18, when all my friends they're heading out on a Friday night, and here I am tucked up in a bed because I've got to drive 45 minutes from the South Coast up to Campbelltown to play first grade cricket to try and achieve my dream. I think about all the coaches that have helped me along the way. I think about the guidance of the great Dennis Lilly. And ironically, where we did the presentation was right next to the statue of DK Lilly. I think about the sacrifices that mum and dad have made and pretty much gave up their life to allow me, I'm one of three boys in the family, and to allow me to try to achieve my dream. And so it's all those flooding moments and memories that when you hear this and what's about to happen, they it just comes flooding back, and it's that appreciation. So I'm the one that's, I guess, front of house, but it's all the people behind the scenes that have helped me.
I think every kid growing up in Australia, they want to bowl quick, as fast as they can. Or if you grew up in the era of Shane Warne, bowl some leg spin. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to ask you when you wanted to bowl fast, because I feel like every kid wanted to do that. When did you realise you actually could?
Well, pretty much when I started bowling.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my brother Shane threw me the ball in the backyard at 9 and said, bowl. I said, well, how do you do that? And he goes, just do that and do that. So, watching Warne on TV, bowl, ripping leg spin, the bleached blonde hair and the earring, I knew that wasn't my style. I wasn't going to be a leg spinner. I couldn't bat, so batting wasn't attractive to me. Mm. But to run in and to see the stumps fly, 9, 10, 11 years of age, that was exciting. And you become obsessed with this need for like pace and speed. So, through my early teens, it was probably about 15 or 16 where I made that transition from the South Coast, the Illawarra region, up to Campbelltown, and to go and train at the age of 15 with Campbelltown, and to see what the fast bowlers were doing. I thought, I'm not that far off here in terms of speed. And then play first grade at the age of 16. And I think 16 was so young, and I was tiny, I was small, I hadn't grown, I was wiry, I was skinny. And I just had the big eyes opened up to the big wide world and think, this is what I want to do. So probably 15 or 16.
I just was at your press conference out the back of the MCG in the shadows of these grand grandstands that we have here. And I took a pan from the statue of Dennis Lilly down to you speaking. He was a significant influence in your career, wasn't he? What did he do for you?
Look, great question. He did everything for me. And I'm sitting here today and have this award that I've been presented with because of the sacrifice that he made, and probably it was that mindset of something could be special here. So he grabbed me at the age of 16 when I had my first back injury. I flew to Perth to spend some time with him, and we formed this amazing friendship, and he was the one that was instrumental into fixing up my action. So I had what they call a mixed action. So I could bowl fast, but how quickly could you bowl and how long could you sustain that? So I knew that if I was to continue with a mixed action, so my bottom half was 45 to the wicket. I wasn't front on, I wasn't side on, but my top half, and what you're told as a kid, to look through that window. So my back was twisting consistently, and that's the reason why I had stress fractures. he ironed all that out because he had obviously went through the same problems as me and taught himself, and he had no one to teach him. But being the great guy that DK Lilly is, he passed it on to me and, as I said, took me under his wing and gave me that guidance. And from the age of 16, I'd worked with him numerous amounts of times, you know, in Perth, in Sydney. I've spent some time with him over in India. And up until I officially retired at the age of 39, 10 years ago, I was working on my action to the last ball I bowled in the BBL. I was still working on my action. I never quite got it right, but I got it to a point where it was pretty close.
Constant improvement. It's a theme with a lot of great athletes and very successful people. I think Dennis Lilly did the same thing for Pat Cummins, who had that counter rotation early in his career and ironed that out. You come from good stock as well. I know you're a big believer in sprint training for fast bowlers. I believe you got some pretty handy genetics and learnings from your mum in that area.
Yeah, look, mum was the athlete in the family. She always said that we got the natural talent off her. Dad reckons it came from him. And, you know, they always muck around. But, you know, mum was a sprinter growing up, and she had the you know, ability up till I was about the age of 12. She could beat me in a race, and she was quick.
Wow.
And having those natural genes, I guess, were something that organically I had and I was gifted with. We did a lot of athletics training growing up. And I can promise you that is the one thing I think that allowed me to bowl at 160 Ks was because I had the ability to run fast. And look, it took a lot of training and a lot of you know, sacrifices and everything. And then you combine that with my dad and his that mental strength that he had and that never say die attitude. Dad wasn't a cricketer, but he upskilled himself very quickly by watching TV and watching actions and learning about the game. But he told me, he said, whatever you do, whatever you put your mind to, never ever give up. And those words have always stayed with me. So play fairly and squarely, have the integrity, have the ability that when you do lose, that you have to appreciate that you've been outplayed, but leave nothing on the field. So that combination of dad with his smarts, the combination of mum with her natural athletic ability, and some hard work and sacrifices, I guess that's a reason why I hit that 160 barrier.
A few questions around extreme pace. Most of us won't get to bowl upwards of 150 and hit 160 like you did. What does it feel like when you bowl a delivery above 150 clicks?
It is the most special feeling because it doesn't happen that often, if at all ever in someone's career. So I mentioned out there, it's like the 4-minute mile. Look, I'm grateful that I've had that ability to bowl over 160 on a few occasions, but it feels like you know, everything has to click in the right time. It's got to be the right run up. You have to have that right amount of momentum. Now, you can't sprint in 100% because you'll be too flat at the crease. You'll lose your jump. You'll lose the height. You can't run in too slow because you'll lose that inertia through the crease and that momentum. So you literally have to hit the crease at the right pace. And now with technology, I know that my run-up would have been about 20, 25 to 28 Ks an hour running in. I would not have had a clue growing up what that would have been like. But now with the technology, we know that that would have suited me as a bowler. I know that I had the perfect landing. My spikes had to land perfectly in the crease. That pull down, that snap of the front arm, the snap of the wrist, the follow through. But when it comes out and you look up and you see 160, it's like you feel bulletproof. You feel like that was what I was born to do. And when I did that 160 and like the flooding of emotions, because from the age of 9, that's what I'd committed my brain and my body to do.
I think your former skipper, the oracle of Australian cricket now, Ricky Ponting, had a bit to say about you looking up at the scoreboard, didn't he, after every delivery?
He said, mate, we'd have to get you the chiropractor and the physio, because every time you bowl the ball, you look up to see what the speed gun's saying. Look, that was a great era. That was a really, really great era for me personally to play in and to have the pleasure to play in that team. And that race with Shoaib Akhtar.
Yeah.
You know, that race with Shoaib to try to get to 160. Who would get there the quickest? Will we get there at all? There was a lot of hype around through the press. And, you know, they got these two guys that playing against each other from different countries. And they're trying to bowl 160. And I think there's something very special about someone that's got the ability to bowl over 150 and a batsman take it on. Like, I love nothing more than seeing you know, guys like Mitchell Starc when he hits 150, Joff Archer when he hits 150, against a Stephen Smith, against a Ricky Ponting, against a Jack Callis or Sachin Tendulkar. And, you know, as a fast bowler, and I've bowled a lot of bounces in my career and I've been hit for a lot of sixes, but to bowl what you think is a perfect ball at 150 Ks plus, and a batsman gets inside and hits you, you know, 15 rows back, it's appreciative cricket and you go, good shot.
Yeah.
Good shot.
Which is part of what your dad taught you and you've spoken about in this interview. Just on bowlers bowling quick now, it feels like we see them maybe push up above 145, but they tend not to be able to stay there for a long period of time. When you were bowling that quick, how long could it last for? And what is reasonable in terms of being able to sustain extreme pace, do you think?
Well, look, I've always said I wasn't sort of about how many wickets I took for Australia. You know, you hear all these stats, and I'm not really into the stats, and definitely not personal stats. But one thing I think my greatest achievement was to be able to bowl 150 Ks plus for 20 years.
Yep.
But that came down to hard work and dedication and sacrifices. So I got the best out of my body. I think I got the best out of my ability. So I've left nothing, you know, I can walk away from the game now and think that I've done my absolute best. And there's been plenty of times where that wasn't good enough. And that's fine. I'm actually okay with that. But I think the reason why a lot of bowlers now, and if you look at the stats, Ben, and what's happened over the years in terms of power hitting from batsmen, if you look at the graphics and the graph, it's going north very quickly in terms of the way batters are playing different shots now and power hitting. If you look at the last 20 years with bowlers and their speeds, the speeds have actually come off. And I think with technology, I think with the use of AI now, I think with what we're meant to have the best medical staff in the world, why haven't we been able to see young kids bowl 160 consistently? Is that the ceiling? Is that the roof? Is that where the body is only humanly possible to get to? But I also think that it's the training. And if I was to get a young kid now, you know, 14, 15, 16 years of age that have got natural ability, the first thing I'd do is I'd take the cricket ball out of their hand. I'd say, right, we need some sprint training.
Yep.
The options now with, you know, the kids playing T20 cricket and the slower balls and the change-ups. So I think that's also, you know, been a bit of a hindrance on kids bowling 160 Ks because it's the hardest part of the job of cricket. But I think if kids had that right ability to be able to get some sprint training in and lean muscle mass, and the first thing that they do is they bring in a young kid and they bulk them up. Yep. Let's get them strong. Now, to bowl fast, you don't need big muscles. You need lean muscle mass. So you need to make sure that what the mass that you're carrying is exactly what you need to get the best out of your ability. Combine that with some good fast switch fibres and then a bit of that mindset to never give up. That's how you get past 150.
I wouldn't mind a little bit of that lean muscle mass as well, Brett.
You're going well,
we'll
mate.
See how we go.
You're going well.
Just a couple of very quick ones before I let you go because you've got a lot to do today and it's a big day for you and your family. I think a lot of people forget how long you were 12th man for early on in your career. What did you get out of that? What did you learn that set you up for the rest of your career during that period, do you think?
Yeah, that was a challenging part of my career because I just bowled 161.1 in New Zealand in one day cricket. And I was 12th man for Australian Test cricket for 18 months. So I was carrying the drinks. And to me, that was when I was like, I'm ready to go here. Like, I'm literally what I feel at the top of my game. I sort of felt like I was the fittest I've ever been in my career. And I couldn't execute that on the field. I couldn't get that opportunity. But you just have to suck it up as a bowler. You want your teammates to do well. You want to make sure that the guy that's got your spot, you can get that spot back off him organically through hard work and taking wickets. So I just, as any young fast bowler would do, I trained harder and I worked on training smarter and just tried to limit how many times I got injured. So that to me was, that was a tough part of my career because, you know, you read in the press that I was the most expensive drinks waiter in the world. I know how to mix a good Gatorade now, though.
Yep, well, and probably a Coke No Sugar for Warnie. He probably didn't want the Gatorade as much. I was a kid of the late 90s and the early 2000s. So I just want you to explain to me where you think I got these from. Blonde tips in the hair,
yep.
Centre part, when I would bowl quick, after a couple of steps, I'd have a little dip. And just before the load up, I'd really stick the ball up high in the air. Where do you think that came from?
Well, I like to say me, but maybe not. maybe you're a Backstreet Boys fan with the bleach blonde hair and the part in the middle, mate.
Where did the dip come from?
Where did the
little dip? So it's a nuffy question, but
it is a nuffy, but it's spot on. Like it's been called a goose step.
Yeah.
I do not know where it came from. It's almost like that kicked me in the gear. Like I take a few steps and then do this little goose step. I don't know how it happened. And even playing in the Masters Leagues only 3 months ago and having a half run up and not to have that in there felt so weird. Like because that becomes part of your routine. And yeah, I used to run in 40 meters, you know, every single time, 40 meters, and I would run two or three steps and I'd kick in. The only thing I could think of is a bit like a long jumper or a triple jumper. They have a certain part of the field or the part of the sort of run up where they hit it and they hit that momentum. It's where they click in the gear.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. I don't know what happened, but it worked.
It certainly did. There's so many things I could have asked you about, like your hat trick at the 03 Cricket World Cup. Corbin and I, we talk about it all the time, and the poor Kenyan batsman howling in pain, I think, at Dongo.
Yeah.
Donga.
Yeah.
He was in a world of hurt in the wake of that hat trick. Brett, we're also happy for you. You deserve it. Not a moment too soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ben. And you know, you do a great job, mate. I've listened in a fair bit, mate. But look, it's a huge honour for me, but this is for my family today. So yeah, very, very appreciative.
Enjoy it. Congrats.
Thanks, Ben.